I want to give everyone an extended version of the Flashback Twin Cities theme song today.
I do love this song. I'm so glad that you found this.
If you want to find this, this is on the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack. But it's also used.
I should turn it back up and just play it for a little bit.
I'm sure there's some people that would prefer that to this. But this is also was the Channel 9 news theme for about 3 years, and I don't think they thought anyone would notice.
Hey, I'm not going to say anything if you don't. Is that the plan?
Well, you know, most newscasts had their own pre-produced package, and Channel 9 decided just to use a popular movie, Saturday Night Fever, and then it worked out for them until, that was for a few years, and okay, this is really boring. So it's every Saturday we have this challenge here. We're trying to do our little radio show here, and it seems like the world is against us. We've had the bank robbery incident that half the block was shut down. We've had weather. We've had winter. We had foot of snow. We've had today was the obstacle course of not only road construction but also trees, power lines, random cones and orange flashing lights.
Various streets shut down.
Yep.
They don't want to let us here.
The state really wants to kill us, I think, is what it's come down to.
Maybe that's an exaggeration. Just a smidge.
You know, it's not only us that had a bad week. You know who else had a bad week?
Who?
George Zimmer. Do you know who George Zimmer is?
Men's Warehouse.
Men's Warehouse. Get it? It's W-E-A-R, Warehouse.
Aha. Very good.
After retailer Men's Warehouse announced that it terminated founder and executive chairman George Zimmer, best known to consumers for its hundreds of TV commercials pitching suits, he fired back saying the company's board has inappropriately chosen to silence my concerns.
This is news to me. I didn't know about any of this.
The company said that in light of Mr. Zimmer's termination, it is postponing its annual shareholders meeting, which has been scheduled for 11 a.m. today in California. This was yesterday. Over the last 40 years, I have built the Men's Warehouse into a multi-billion-dollar company with amazing employees and loyal customers who value the products and service they receive at the Men's Warehouse, Zimmer said in a statement. Over the past several months, I have expressed my concerns to the board about the direction the company is currently heading instead of fostering the kind of dialogue in the boardroom that has, in part, contributed to our success. The board has inappropriately chosen to silence my concerns by terminating me as an executive officer.
Jeez. The only difference that I've noticed from outside looking in is that his voice has just gotten so much deeper in his commercials. It sounds like Batman now.
I get the sense that George might have smoked some cigarettes in his life, but I could be incorrect.
Yeah, that could. I don't know. I think he's just trying hard.
Zimmerman's famous tagline was, "You're going to like the way you look. I guarantee it." What I'm trying to find out is what were George's concerns, but I do have the video I pulled up there. Let's take a listen to that really that gravelly voice of that we can all aspire to be someday.
Once a year, and only once a year, the Men's Warehouse has a sale, and this is it. Save an additional 20 to 40% off the Men's Warehouse everyday low prices. Save on thousands of suits, sport coats, slacks, shirts, ties, and shoes. Save on single and double-breasted wool and wool blend suits and sport coats. It takes a Men's Warehouse sale to beat a Men's Warehouse price. I guarantee it.
I think that sale happens once a week, actually. I think that their annual June, annual July sale.
Our annual bi-weekly sale?
Are they an advertiser of ours?
I don't think so.
Okay. All right. Well,
good call. I should have probably looked that up before we started talking about this.
I've done some I did my research. I do not think that the Men's Warehouse advertises on KLBB radio, which I'm sure we'd welcome that. But
I swear, his voice is now, it just sounds way down deep and gravelly, like he's trying to intimidate you into buying a suit.
Okay, well, here's a personal anecdote. I went to the Men's Warehouse two times. Mm-hmm. I was expecting a guy like George to come help me find a suit and really, you know, but it wasn't quite the case. It was not a great experience. And I'm hoping that was one of his concerns, that
he's been trying to pick up and make a little bit better.
I hope so. I hope so. We have a great show today. Gary Lumpkin, he was the roving reporter on Good Company. Good Company, which a lot of us in the Generation X world remember from coming home after school. And Good Company might have not have been a show that kids my age or our age would have watched. But the best part was Gary Lumpkin and his daily adventures, ranging from rodeo riding to skydiving to jet skiing, shopping around for the best hamburger in town. He did everything. And we have him coming up. And after this break, here on Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB. Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB. Club 1220, again, Tom Osmond with Tom Hsu, the master engineer, next room.
Howdy do.
Master engineer, only engineer, but he's still a master at it.
That's because I'm the best here.
That's right.
I'm the only one here.
Just commenting a little bit about the challenges of getting into the studio today, and Gary, you mentioned you had a few challenges, too, with the road work and...
Oh, that's right, driving in, yeah, they've decided to do whatever they've decided to do on 36, unfortunately, there aren't many alternates to get to Stillwater, I guess. I could have probably gone via Duluth, and it would have been about the same, but I wasn't smart enough to take that route.
You know, I just leave 2 hours early every week now because I figure if I, you know, whatever happens, within 2 hours, any problem can be resolved. And it's the challenge is telling your guests to come to a 1 o'clock interview 2 hours early is not always the easiest thing to do, but I'm glad everyone made it here in time. So, Gary, this is a great interview for me because I was just talking to Tom here before the next segment here. Watching Good Company as a Generation X kid, you come home from school about 3:30, and Good Company's on. And you know, most of the Good Company show really didn't pertain to grade school kids, except your section, the roving reporter Gary Lumpkin, who would be doing things from. I just watched one last night. You were a rodeo clown. I watched some video of you with, I think the Miss. Miss Minnesota pageant, you were with them at one point.
I never touched her, Your Honor. I was nowhere near that woman at any part. And,
I have no proof of that.
It's the statute of limitations anyway, so go ahead.
But the one I watched, it was a 15-minute segment of you checking out every fast food hamburger in town, and they wouldn't let you record in the fast food restaurant, so you actually had to go on the curb and eat the burger outside Burger King on the curb on University Avenue because they wouldn't let you inside the restaurant.
Well, see, there was actually two parts to that story. One was, of course, the information to get the burger information. But I have a certain minimal caloric intake I have to have every day. And this was my sneaky way of getting, basically two burgers or with one stone.
It worked. And this is 12 years of Good Company, right? 12,
yes, sir.
And you are not from Minnesota. You came from Utah. You were a football coach at the University of Utah, and you ended up in news.
So? It wasn't my fault.
Well, why are you cornering the guest, Tom?
Yes, sir. Wait a minute. No, not the zapper. He's going to zap me, everybody. He's going to zap me for not telling. Yes, okay. Anyway.
you're a prestigious – the University of Utah, you're a prestigious university. And what drew you into TV?
Well, it's kind of a goofy story because I had no training, aptitude, or inclination to do anything in broadcasting.
You fit quite well in this room right now.
There you go. See, it just goes to show you that the cream doesn't always sink to the bottom. But what happened was I was during the game. It's kind of a long story, but during the game, I was up in the booth helping to spot because I was never at the game, at the practices very much during the week. I would be traveling on the road as the recruiting coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You really want to hear this? Okay.
I do.
Well, anyway, so because I wasn't at practice all the time, even though I was the coach, they decided they would want to put one guy on the road recruiting because that was a big deal at Utah. We had a lot of hurdles to overcome to be competitive at recruiting. So I traveled all over the country recruiting during the week. I would meet the team at the game on Saturday, have no idea the game plan or anything. So I would be up in the booth helping to spot. our booth was right next to the radio guys, and so I would be watching them. And so one time they happened to say, "Hey, ask me a question. Hey, Coach Lumpkin, explain such a da da." Then they started doing it a couple more times, and I really wasn't missed much by the other coaches. So I kind of evolved into helping them on the radio.
Okay.
So then I said, well, gosh, this is fun. The football people don't seem to be missing me very much, and I'm kind of liking this. If radio is this much fun, kind of like the fun we're having right now, is he just nodded off there, folks, but I'll try to speak a little softer.
Wake up. Wake up.
And so I said, I wonder how fun TV would be, and kind of made some inquiries, and the TV, local TV station said, yeah, we've heard you on the radio, and even without saying any more about that, well, if you want to come and do a little, they offered me a job. They didn't have any sports jobs, but they offered me a job as a stringer.
Okay.
And I said, great, part-time job as a stringer. I'll take it. And then I left the room and had to go ask somebody what a stringer was. True story. And so I found out what that was, and it just sort of meant like a jack of all trades and just kind of filling in stories on a catch-as-catch can.
And did they put you on payroll? Or did
they paid me by the story.
Okay.
$30 a story.
Okay.
And then the story started to seem to work out. They offered me a full-time job in sports. And as a feature reporter, not sports. So I became a full-time feature reporter. And
was this the birth of some of the
thing led to another, and I ended up in Minnesota.
To our audience here, Gary was generous and gave me his library of tapes, which are slowly going to be popping on tcmedianow.com little by little here. You gave me a bunch of tapes from Utah, which I've not gone through yet, but I'm guessing when I go through those, and we'll have you on for part two and part three at some point, this is going to be the birth of the roving reporter days. This is finding the unique story in a what could be a very boring, mundane situation. What's that story out there that's actually really interesting, and getting in there and finding that TV
the hook. The
thank you. Yes,
I'm here for you.
Say that again.
this was the start of the finding that. Help me out here, Tom.
How do you find that hook that just grabs the attention of the audience?
I don't know. I have no idea. I wish I had a clever, insightful answer to that question. I guess if it interested me and I thought if I could tell the story, I really did think of myself as a storyteller. And sometimes it worked. Sometimes it was very sophomoric and humor-wise, and it didn't work as well. Obviously, they weren't all home runs by any means. But sometimes they did work, and sometimes the subject matter just get out of the way of it. Other times you had to really torture it and twist it and kind of make something out of it. It's all facets of that. And I kind of got really lucky in that this feature reporter thing evolved into what it did, because sports would have been so much more limiting. I still always did all the sports I ever wanted to do, from just covering it to participating, which kind of became the niche rather at Good Company. Was getting involved in something. Don't just go to the rodeo, get on the doggone bull,
right?
You know, and so forth. In fact, one of the first really participatory stories I did was out at the rodeo in Hudson. The world's toughest rodeo was out there, and I got on the bull, was off in a second, 2 seconds, landed on my butt, and didn't get hurt and anything, and kind of woke up the next morning with blood in my urine.
Oh, dear.
Now, I had been working at Good Company about 3 weeks, so I was under the 30-day your insurance kicks in period. So I had no insurance, and here I'm thinking dialysis, kidney transplant, all kinds of horrible things. I actually called the team football doctor back in Utah, told him what happened, and he said, well, give yourself another 24 hours. Blood in the urine really is not that uncommon. Athletes have it all the time, which I knew, I guess.
Right.
But anyway, so it was almost a very short career, it was kind of a sign of times, things to come.
They had to have kept a high insurance policy on you when you were. Especially when I'm watching the skateboard ramp video. You're on the he's on the skateboard ramp, which is actually like two buildings that there's no flat space to it. You can't can't stand flat on it. Yep. When you talk to these, you know, Steve or Sharon, and say, hey, here's what I'm going to do today. Were these your ideas or their ideas?
No, they made me do that under penalty of severe. No, they never knew. They never knew what I was going to do. They never knew, and they just kind of accepted my judgment, I guess, as for want of a better out. And yeah, they pretty much let me do what I wanted to do. That was. I had a pretty good gig in a lot of ways, and the creative freedom was perhaps the biggest plus. Obviously, it was great fun. I got to travel. I got to meet people and all that kind of stuff. But to have nobody really breathing down my neck about content or style or any of that stuff, they just kind of let me alone. And maybe I earned that, I guess. But still, they could have, if they wanted to, have been more controlling, and they chose not to do that, and it worked out. It worked out good for everybody.
Well, if you're only making $30 a story, and you can only have so many stories in a night, I mean, how did you keep yourself from just having a lot of filler? Just you didn't even work hard to make it happen, make it right.
Well, that $30 a story luckily only lasted for about a month in Utah.
Oh,
and then I went from that $30 a story stringer to a full time job there.
So every time you did a story, you made it as good as possible, and that must be why they give you the freedom, because apparently you didn't screw up.
Well, not doing that. There's some that I look back on, and I'm gonna be really interested in seeing the tapes I gave Tom, the box of tapes and stuff like that. Several boxes have not seen the light of day for a long time, and I know that when I finally get to see those after all these years, I'm going to cringe because they're going to be pretty crummy, but.
You know, hey, it's all part of the growth and evolution of us as human beings.
Well,
right?
There you go. That's my story. I'm sticking to it.
I'm trying to keep this intellectual integrity up here. Now, let's talk a little bit about you're doing sports. You're doing feature reporting in Utah. Did you have like a stack of videotapes you sent out to all these different cities? And how did Good Company bite? How did you move from Utah to Minnesota happen?
At that time, there was a show that was a national show with local versions of it called PM Magazine.
Right.
And there were PM Magazines all over the country. There was one right there in Salt Lake City, and there was one here in the Twin Cities. I thought that would be a good show for me. So in a national, the Broadcast Magazine is a weekly publication in the industry. There would be in the back of the magazine, the want ads of jobs open, and I kept looking for PM Magazine openings all over the country.
And PM Magazine was a franchise show. That was a show that it was I think Group W owned it, and they had local hosts, and they'd have national packages mixing with local local pieces, right?
Yeah, if you were local, you'd do a story about your town and your market, but then you'd send it out, and any of the other PM Magazines could air it if they wanted
right.
to. And so, yeah, it was a pretty good concept of sharing material. So that's what I thought. If I could ever get a PM Magazine show, that would really be a good gig. Well, in the process, I sent out some tapes and resumes and stuff like that. And there was this show in Minnesota, a new afternoon talk show looking for a feature reporter. So I applied for that, sent them a tape. They flew me back here for an interview, and in the process of that, show hadn't even gone on the air yet. They sent me out with a camera crew to do a story, just to see how I worked in the field. Nothing like I would ever do. Okay, nothing like the tapes I had sent them. I went to the unemployment office, okay, and sat around in this big room with all these people waiting for their number to come up so they could talk to the clerk there, and it was just dreadful.
This is what they had you come here and do a story on the unemployment office in Minnesota. That was your test?
That was my test story.
Well, and this is 1982 during the height of the recession, so this had been a really, really uplifting, cheerful moment for you.
Yeah. I said, gosh, I'm not sure I want this job even if they offer it, and this is, but Steve and Sharon already had a name in the market from having been on earlier in a morning show. They had left, and now we're coming back to start a new afternoon show. So I figured, well, this is dead. I couldn't possibly. Plus the fact, I remember when I came in, I can remember the dates because it was easy to remember. It was April 15th, tax day, of course, and I flew in, and there was 15 inches of snow. So the 15s are easy to remember. And I'm thinking, gosh, I hope they don't offer me a job because who would live in a place like this? And I now know that that's that's very rare. It's usually 15 inches in May.
Right, or June, I was going to say. Yeah. This year would have been 15 inches in June.
Exactly. So,
have you ever been to Minnesota before? Have you ever?
No. I knew pretty much where Minnesota was on a map.
Right.
Okay, but within that basic rectangle of Minnesota, I didn't know where the Twin Cities were. It could have been in the middle of the state. It could have been it could have been up on the Canadian border. It could have been anywhere. As it turns out, it's kind of close to Iowa.
Mary Richards had worked here and worked out well for her. And
yeah,
so,
but I couldn't throw a Tam Shanter hat in the air like that.
I see.
So I have, I didn't have that skill.
Your statue's yet to come. It'll be on University Avenue, the microphone. There in the Hubbard, by the Hubbard building there.
Yeah. That'll be.
Well, dream, right? So you did this really depressing story about unemployment, but I guess Gary Lumpkin.
And they hired me anyway. So they hired me anyway, and then I had.
You must have made it a fun event. Did you go in there and say, hey, it's Gary Lumpkin, and put the microphone in people's faces and say,
I have no idea.
How's the unemployment going for you?
It's all just an ugly memory, and I have no idea what I said, what I did. And
I want to find the tape now. I want to hope that tape is in the box there because that's going to be featured on the website.
We can do a little critique of it.
A little critique of it.
Yeah, it's my audition tape. But that's what it was. It was no semblance on anything I ever did again, and yet that's what they chose to have me do.
Gary Lumpkin, my guest today. Tom, play the video I put up. This is the iconic Good Company theme song, and you're happening to be hosting this particular event at Good Company.
ETV, St. Paul, Minneapolis, Channel 5.
Hi there, I'm Gary Lumpkin.
And I'm Bob Bruce, and today on Good Company, I'll be cooking up a special Italian dish with Mama D.
And we'll meet the new 1983 Mrs. Minnesota, Judy List.
And Gary will be talking with Tom Petty, a big rock star.
And on our Minnesota getaway, we'll travel to the historic town of Hinckley, Minnesota.
It's all coming up next on Good Company.
Stay tuned.
From the Twin Cities, it's Good Company.
Now, I hope the folks continue to keep listening and not run for their computers right now to pull that thing up, because when they get there, the hairstyles, I don't think there's that much hairspray. Yeah, hairspray left in the Twin Cities.
I think between you and Bob, there had been at least two aerosol cans.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, did you have to use the face mask when you sprayed the spray on there before the show started?
I don't know. I'm pleading the fifth. I don't even know that was really me.
I think people are going there not only for the hairstyles, but the sport coats. I mean, the sport coats. Yours is a little bit more conservative than Bob. Bob has the mint green sport coat. Not that one, but the one we were watching before.
Have a single hair out of place. That's amazing.
Still, even today, that's because I don't have any hair. Maybe that's a. But it's just.
Tom, play that. Keep playing that. Actually, there's some audio here while I'm here.
Fine. Anyway, I guess we should mention where Steve and Sharon are. They're in Los Angeles working on a story. And is it true? They told me that they're attending a party tonight for Joan Collins of Dynasty.
The one that may have fried last night. We don't know that yet, do we? I didn't get a chance to see it, but I heard some people talking about it before the show. I missed the episode last night. But anyway, that's right. They're at a party with Joan Collins tonight, and they'll have that and a number of other treats, including behind the scenes of the Battle of the Network Stars and some fun stuff from this couple-day trip in California.
I caught a little bit of Dynasty last night. It was certainly more interesting than the third period of the North Star game.
Well, what happened, by the way?
I don't know, and Lou Nanny doesn't know, and it's really people have to be concerned.
Okay, now we're getting into that's old news now.
Back in the past, the North Stars, there was a hockey team, folks. It used to be here.
There was a hockey team that 20 years ago went to a different state. I can't remember which one. Was it?
They broke my heart.
Yeah, Norm Green or Lauren Green or whatever his name was.
That's it.
Yeah. So 12 years of Good Company and 12 years of putting your body through torture and putting yourself out there. Tell me this. Were you scared when you were doing these stunts? Were you really scared? You didn't look scared even when you fell down, even when you were.
I wasn't that I was all that brave. I don't think I had a real sense of. It's always the other guy that gets hurt, guess.
Right.
I kind of thought about that from time to time. I thought I got scared afterwards. I talked about that bull ride, one of my first stories, when I landed on my butt. In the video, I never realized it, but I landed on my seat and kind of just rolled over to the side to try to get up very quickly. When I watched the video, I hit and I rolled, and where I was sitting, where I had landed, a split second later, the bull's back legs came down. On that exact spot. Now, I was just dumb luck that I happened to hit and roll and get out of the way. I wasn't thinking about the bull. I was just oops, I'm up. I better get up. You know, I don't want to look foolish. Very concerned about my image, of course, you know.
Right, of course.
Yeah, have to look good at all times, even when you fall on your face or other parts of your body. But the point is, that could have been, once again, came within literally less than a second of something pretty ugly happening. But the bull missed me, and I got up and carried on. That's kind of got my attention afterwards, but it really wasn't enough to make any difference, because about 4 years later I rode a bull again. Similar results. I didn't have blood in the urine afterwards, but I was my total time on the bull was about the same. So I'm a slow learner.
When's the last time you rode a bull?
That was it.
Okay.
I did it twice. I did it twice. I did ride a buffalo once.
You rode a buffalo?
Yeah, rode the buffalo at a rodeo. Said no bulls. How about a buffalo? Oh, sure.
Sure.
So
way better.
So there's no saddle, no bridle, but you know, you got all that big mane. Mm-hmm. You know, so you just grab onto that.
They don't seem like a very friendly creature.
They're not.
They
but
are until they gore you.
Every animal's friendly until it talks to you or until it meets you. Yeah.
They said you don't have to worry about the animal stomping on you because they're not vicious or anything like that. Just, you know, be aware of the horns. And I said, well, yeah, no problem. So, of course, what happened was I rode the bull, and somehow as I was bucking along, was going more and more forward. Mm-hmm. So that eventually the bull sort of slowed down quickly, and I went over the front of the bull. Now, the bull didn't continue on. He stopped and went around me. But in getting up, I realized as I picked myself up, the front of my shirt was totally ripped open. So the front of my shirt had caught on the horn of the bull as I was going across the top of his horns. and I went, oh, wow, look at this. How about that, everybody? They went, yeah, how about that, you goofus? It impressed my daughter, was about five or six at the time. So when I came home that night, because they were watching the show, there was a note for me on the door. It says, Daddy, no more riding wild buffaloes.
And you've kept that promise ever since.
I did not get on a wild buffalo ever again.
Did you ever spend some time in the hospital after doing one of these events?
I had one knee surgery from a skiing accident where I just kind of wasn't doing anything really exotic or anything, just kind of doing some things on moguls and kind of went down, and my knee went, ooh, that's not good. And so I ended up tearing some cartilage in my knee and head. But, you know, hey, we made a story out of that. We took a camera into the operating room and watched the guy do orthoscopic. What's the little where he goes with them? Just a microscope. Yeah, orthoscopic. Anyway, they don't cut you wide open, but they go into these little bitty holes with a microscope. And
all your medical expenses became business expenses. Look at that. I mean, you just found a way to write all that off. That's great.
Well, you know, you earlier, I forgot the comment, you asked something about did they ever kind of control you. Our insurance guy did have a conversation once with Edelman about, do you really need this guy doing this stuff? I mean, I'm not sure, you know, if something really catastrophic happens that he's covered. And Edelman says, hey, just, you know, he needs to do what he does, and he's going to be okay.
As long as the camera's on me, nothing bad can happen, right?